Hello everybody, it's George Ireland, so welcome back to my channel. Well, we're on day, is it 15 of the Ukrainian incursion into Kursk? And, you know, it's even worse than I thought for Russia. I thought they would have started to push them out there, but they're not. So they've rushed troops from the interior of Russia. And the one thing that this is masking is people don't seem to realize Russia is still advancing in Ukraine, like towards Pokrovsk. And there's some towns where Ukrainians evacuated the civilians who up until now were refusing to go. The great majority of them left of their own accord a year or two ago. But some people, particularly geriatrics, say, I'm just too old to move. If I'm going to die, that's it. But, you know, Ukraine has forcibly evacuated them. So Putin says there must be no let up in the advance in Ukraine. And that's why he's been so hesitant about withdrawing troops from Ukraine and bringing them into Kursk Oblast, Belgorod Oblast, to try and, first of all, contain the Ukrainian incursion and then push them back over the border. Even Russia has now been forced to do that, and they've withdrawn 5,000 troops, they say. It's estimated Ukraine's got at least 6,000 troops in the Kursk incursion, you know, dozens of tanks, infantry fighting vehicles, armored personnel carriers, and so on. But one of the hotly contested issues in the United Kingdom about this is, should His Majesty's government permit Ukraine to use those Storm Shadow missiles inside Russia? These are jointly French-British manufactured missiles. They're air-launched, and apparently they're fantastic. I mean, I don't know anything about this kind of thing, but they've got a range of over 200 kilometers, pinpoint accuracy, all the rest of it. And particularly used against the Russian Air Force, which would then oblige Putin to move his planes further back out of range, which makes it much harder for them to strike targets inside Ukraine, because at the takeoff, you can see them coming much further away. They often launch the things from further out. The planes themselves are in the air in danger for longer. The missiles, you know, more chance countermeasures are going to hit, and some of Ukraine will be out of range of that. See more fuel be used by the Russians, moving everything like that. And as I've often said, Putin does not give a damn about the lives of his own people. Well over 120,000 Russians killed in this war, and terrorist attacks. He deliberately set off bombs to murder hundreds of Russian civilians in 1999, the apartment block bombings, in order to provide a false justification for renewing the war in Chechnya, murdering thousands of Russian civilians. Chechens is an ethnic minority, but they are Russian citizens, and so on. He's a man who lauded Stalin, one of the most, probably the bloodthirstiest mass murderer of all time, and that's who he idolizes. And the rehabilitation of Stalin's reputation over the last couple of decades is terrifying. In the 90s, organizations like Memorial talked about just how extremely violent and sadistic he was. And that's just no longer allowed. He's adulated. And these organizations that talk about human rights, they're criminalized now. So should France and the UK allow these missiles to be used? The United Kingdom gifted some of its own stock. It's thought to have up to 1,000 of these. How many is given to Ukraine? It hasn't said. I don't think France has given any. France, by having the same population and an economy size as the United Kingdom, has given about a fifth of what the UK has given. But I think no Storm Shadows. I don't know if London would also require Paris's permission for Ukraine to use these ones inside Russia. But so far, Sir Keir Starmer is not granting that say-so, and surely he should, because Ukraine is constantly having to fight this war with one hand tied behind its back. For Russia, there are no holds barred, there are no legal considerations, there's no ethical bottom line, there's absolutely nothing they will not do. They haven't so far gone nuclear use, chemical, biological weapons, but that's solely because they've been threatened. They know the blowback will be too far. So if people stand up, are firm with them, we know that that's when they hold off, on no other occasion. It's nothing to do with honesty or common decency or common humanity would stop the Putin regime from doing something. So I'm arguing that the United Kingdom certainly should grant permission for these to be used inside Russia, only against military targets. That's fine. But every single thing any ally of Ukraine has done, Russia's always said, oh, this is escalatory. Ooh, you know, you're running a severe risk here. You're going to bring the sky down to your head there. You know, don't forget we've got nuclear weapons. And Dmitry Medvedev always saber-rattling like that, making these blood-curdling threats. Putin saying if Russia doesn't exist, the human race may not exist, and so on. And hinting darkly that, you know, he's very close to pressing the nuclear button. He's going to smash that big, you know, and it hasn't happened 2.5 years on. I thought in the first autumn winter of the war that they might actually do something, a tactical nuclear weapon. But these things are not that small. I'm told that they're, you know, even a mini one these days is more than Hiroshima. But so they're not going to do it because they said, well, you know, if you're giving more ammunition, if you're giving these anti-tank weapons, if you're giving tanks, if you're giving jets every single time and nothing has ever happened, what can they do? Russia can't even defeat a country of 40 million people. How on earth can they defeat NATO? It's got 800 million people. Bear in mind, Ukraine's military technology is worse than almost all of NATO's. They've got their own manufactured stuff, which is often sort of post-Soviet. But yes, they have been gifted things by NATO countries. But these things often this is often hardware which has reached the end of its service life. You know, so in the United States alone, there'll be dozens of tanks will reach the end of the service life after 20-something years, and they could just be junked or scrapped or whatever, and just given to Ukraine instead. So these things are not very usable. Likewise, what are those Challenger 2 tanks the United Kingdom was given? So they're not in great working condition. They're not very reliable. Say, well, give them to Ukraine because they might be destroyed anyway. Apparently, the 40 had given, any one's been destroyed in over a year. So even with the old technology, which is in parlous condition, the Ukrainians are still doing well. So how on earth would Russia manage against NATO? So it's actually, in a way, very little that NATO's gifted, because NATO's got several thousand tanks, several thousand fighter jets, and it's just given about 1% of that to Ukraine. If NATO gave even 10% of this, Ukraine would win outright, but there's no sign that's going to happen. And it looks like that Germany certainly is going to reduce its military aid to Ukraine to 6% of what it's currently giving. So I think this should be given to Ukraine. Another notable thing is just how slow the Russians are. Obviously, they got to pull their troops out of Donetsk, take them to the east, around to the north, all the way around to the Kursk Oblast or Belgorod Oblast. And they've been very slow in containing this. I thought the Ukrainians would expand further, faster, their oil spot, threaten the city of Belgorod, cut some of the roads and railways to that city, but they haven't done it. They've been quite circumspect, because I suppose they're slightly quitting whilst they're ahead. It's all gone very well. They've suffered minimal losses. They've proven to have taken at least 200 prisoners, some people are saying up to 2,000. These are often teenage conscripts who've been rushed through basic training, not supposed to go over the border, never thought they'd hear a shot fired in anger. And they often surrendered at the first whiff of cordite. So, I mean, I can't blame them. I'll probably do so as well. So that's the easy part, but they might come up against some battle-hardened veterans, and the Chechens will be sent to take them on, have a fearsome reputation. So I think the Ukrainians will withdraw to something more of a defensive perimeter. But yes, the word humiliation has been used in relation to Putin on this Kursk incursion. It certainly is. His nose has been rubbed in the dirt. This is the guy who wanted to gain more territory for Russia, has ended up losing Russian sovereign territory. And okay, in fairness to him, he has gained tens of thousands of square kilometers of Ukraine, but he's lost some of Russia proper. Now, it made me think, is Belarus going to get involved? Because they've massed a third of their army on the border with Ukraine, especially the very eastern section of the Belarusian Ukrainian border, so not far from the Kursk Oblast. I mean, they're threatening. Would they come in? I think they probably won't. I think the idea is to spook the Ukraine and say, we need to guard that northern border, so that they have to put more troops up there to make sure, you know, if the Belarusians do invade, Ukraine has got some chance of stopping them. Because if Russia ever needs its help, it's now, and push might come to shove. Putin might have to twist Lukashenko's arm so much, you've got to help us out here because we're in dire straits. But I don't think it's going to happen. They say his army is very poorly equipped. It hasn't fought since Afghanistan. That's like 35 years ago. And they would mutiny if they were sent to war against Ukraine. I'm not so sure about that last one. All right. Thank you so much for watching my channel. Make sure you subscribe on Patreon, donate PayPal, georgecallahan79@gmail.com. Goodbye.